We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Chicago Bears select.
Welcome to Picks for Polls, presented by The Bear Report. Your number one source for everything Chicago Bears draft news, analysis, scouting reports, and more. Presented by Blue Wire Pods. And now, making their way to the podium, Andrew Freeman and Usaid Koshal.
All right, Bears fans, welcome into another episode of the Picks for Polls podcast, presented by the Bear Report and Blue Wire Pods. My name is Andrew Freeman, and of course, I'm happy to be joined by my co-host, Usaid Koshal. We are recording this episode on a Tuesday here with Thanksgiving right around the corner. There's a lot to be thankful for here, for me here, Usaid, especially with everything going on. But before we get to the contents of today's podcast today, how are you doing today, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Like you said, a lot to be thankful for. I think for me personally, you know, you and I have been kind of doing this podcast for 2 years now, and I think that this is episode 130. So, you know, everybody who listens to this podcast and checks out our work at The Bear Report, between myself, Zach, Beth, Aaron, Bobby, Sam, you know, we just want to give you all a big shout out. Thank you so much for all the continued support, because we wouldn't be in the position that we're in without the endless support that we're getting from everybody. So thank you. And I hope everyone has a great holiday season.
Yeah, it's truly a team effort over here, whether it's at the Bear Report or, you know, also got to be thankful again, like you said, just for all of our listeners on here. You know, I can't believe that we're 103 episodes into this thing. That's kind of crazy to kind of put that all into perspective. Always fun to put these episodes together, and you know, hopefully that this episode can be another fun one, as well as we have a lot on the docket today, as the Bears coming off of a 27-24 loss to the Atlanta Falcons, dropping to 4 straight losses on the season. So Bears not doing really well right now in terms of it record wise, but I mean, like we've alluded to many times before over the last month or so, yeah, the Bears aren't winning a ton of games right now. It's kind of frustrating from that aspect of things, but you know, Justin Fields continues to progress and, you know, play well as the season goes along. You know, we saw some flashes from him once again in this game against the Falcons, but I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, this game, we kind of talked about in our post-game recap of this one with Zach. This one kind of felt like a game where the Bears kind of took a step back a little bit, because, you know, the offense has been humming pretty well over the past month or so. And in this last one, it felt like the offense, despite the fact that they were going up against a pretty porous defense in the Atlanta Falcons, you know, didn't have its best game. You know, in the first half, they scored 17 points, but a lot of that was because they benefited from a lot of short fields and turnovers. You know, Velus Jones Jr. had a nice kick return that kind of set them up for a drive. You know, some field positioning stuff that kind of helped them out. But the second half didn't cut it. You know, they had one really good drive where Justin Fields kind of willed them to a touchdown. But look at that final drive. You know, this game came down to a final drive once again. It seems like, you know, over the last month, I think it's been 4 straight games where it's come down to a final drive for this Bears offense, where they have a chance to go down there and either tie the game or win the game, and they just haven't been able to get it done. So I think that's kind of where we can start this off. You know, what do you make of these offensive struggles, especially late in these games when the Bears have to score late on these final drives. You know, what do you kind of make of that?
Well, I think it's simply put an offense that's really a big work in progress. Now, I had this debate with a couple of our subscribers on the Bear Report boards today. Go check out the forums on the website. And one of the things that was specifically mentioned was the fact that all the elite teams in the NFL, take, for example, the Eagles, the Bills, the Chiefs, you know, those are teams that are averaging 30 points a game or right around there. But the reality is this, right, is that the Bears have a good quarterback who's engineering a lot of those points, right, which is good to see because you need a quarterback, you win games because of, not in spite of. But even then, the Bears' offensive production is still so-so, right, because they don't have a passing attack, they don't have a running game. It seems like we're sitting here, and it's a double-edged sword when it comes to this team, by the way, because we're praising Cole Kmet, right, and guys like Darnell Mooney, but then the reality is it's like, where are these guys late in games, right? Like that interception that Justin had late in the fourth quarter on Sunday against the Falcons, that's one of those situations you look at and say, okay, Justin, there are two white jerseys in the area. Were you throwing to Montgomery or were you throwing to Mooney, you know? Based on, I would guess, he option there, right? So it's just like this offense figures out a way to put points, but a lot of it is driven by the quarterback. Because, like, how many rushing yards does Justin Fields have that bail the Bears out in so many situations? Now, the reality of it is this, is that at the end of the day, the scoreboard is completely delusional. And for anyone saying that, yeah, the Bears average 30 a game, true, that's valid. But this is not an offense that, you know, is among the best in the NFL by any means. I mean, it's still a unit, and we'll get into it in a couple minutes here, that is going to have multiple new starters next year.
Yeah, I think we all know the offense is a work in progress right now, both from a roster level and from this coaching staff is still kind of figuring out, I think, you know, how to best maximize this group. And I think they have figured out some things as the season gone along. Like, they've clearly figured out how to put Justin Fields in position to succeed as a runner more. And that's kind of unlocked a lot of things. But like you said, like, I think, you know, Justin Fields doesn't get enough credit for how much he's generating offense for this offense right now. Because, I mean, I go back to that game, and I think I know I said it on the postgame pod, but I'm going to reiterate here. You know, the game plan felt very predictable in this one, where first and second down, they were running it, and it was usually some form of a very conservative, you know, style of run. On first and second down, and if that didn't get them the first down, or if that didn't work really well, you know, third down was basically, you know, Justin, you know, bail us out here, do something awesome, you know, extend the play, run around a little bit, and see what if you can make some magic. And that's just not a very sustainable way of, you know, offense, I think. And you know, eventually this style of offense is going to catch up to them, because teams are going to start playing, you know, their quarterback run packages a little bit better. I think the Falcons actually did a really nice job in this game of playing those. You know, obviously, Justin Fields, he's such a dynamic athlete that even if you do play, you know, play it correctly on some of these, like, he's still going to make some special plays here and there just because that's who he is as a runner. But, you know, the Falcons, I thought, did a really nice job of bottling that up a little bit. Like, Justin Fields wasn't nearly as efficient on the ground as he has been in weeks past. And this offense, this run game in general wasn't as efficient as it has been in week past. Like, I think they clearly miss Khalil Herbert because he adds an explosive dynamic to it that David Montgomery simply just does not have from a run game standpoint. But I think when you look at the struggles for this offense in terms of late in the game, the last few weeks, it really comes down to their passing game. You know, as for much as, like, I think, you know, they found ways to, you know, get some of these guys open. Like, Cole Kmet's had some moments over the last few weeks. That's been nice to see. We know what Darnell Mooney is as a player. You know, they're still trying to figure out Chase Claypool and get him involved. But we've seen flashes from Dante Pettis and Equanimeous St. Brown where they've done some stuff. But clearly the weapons on the outside aren't good enough for this offense to really, you know, for Justin Fields to be able to drop back and feel confident that he has guys running open every single time he drops back the pass. And that's not what's happening right now. You know, there are definitely some misses on tape that are still occurring, But clearly, when we get into these late game situations where you got to have it, where you need someone to step up and make a play, the Bears just don't have anybody on the roster right now that can do that consistently. And I think that's really hurt them in these late game situations because, you know, when you're on script and you're able to do the read option stuff and the run stuff and kind of play off of Justin Fields' ability as a runner from an offensive standpoint, like, yeah, this offense looks pretty good in those situations because, you know, defenses have to factor that into their game plan. But when you're dropping back the pass, like outside of maybe having a quarterback spy on Justin or maybe, you know, doing things from a pass rushing standpoint to keep him in the pocket and keep him contained, like, you know, this, you know, the defense doesn't have to worry about 10 million different things going on for every single given play. And I think that makes it a lot easier. And that's where we see the talent deficiencies really start to pop up for this Bears offense. And that extends to the offensive line as well, because the offensive line didn't have the greatest game in this one, I felt, either. And again, it has to be said, like, the Falcons, like, they have probably the worst pass rush in football. So there were definitely some plays where the pass protection did hold up very nicely. But there are also a lot of others where there are breakdowns going on. You know, we're not seeing guys, you know, necessarily block the greatest on some of these dropbacks. I remember there was a stretch where there were back-to-back sacks on two screenplays, and that should never happen for an offense. So, I think it comes down to, again, talent. And like we said before, like, this is a work in progress. You know, they're going to continue to add starters to this new unit. And that's going to kind of lead us into speaking of this offensive line, our next topic today, you know, talking about, you know, how this Bears team can go about addressing this offensive line moving forward. So I think what we're going to do for this, you say, is we're going to break this down into kind of three different categories. You know, who do we think is a long-term building block? Who's someone who we're confident is going to be a starter for them next year? What are some free agent options that the Bears can look at next year? And draft-wise, how do you think this should be handled in the draft? So you say, I'll start with you, based off of where we're at right now, like, you know, who do you think are some of the building blocks of this offensive line, if there are any building blocks? Like, who do you think is going to be capable of starting next year for this unit?
Well, I mean, there's only one guy that's a legitimate building block, and that's Tevin Jenkins. You give him credit for how he handled the summer, just how he burst onto the scene. Again, this past week, week 11 as well as week 10, he didn't play for two straight weeks because of the hip injury that he had, but you know what? It's not really a big deal because if anything, Tevin Jenkins, I think, was one of those players who slipped in the draft because of the injury concerns that he had. I mean, people are forgetting this is a player who everybody had. And I think you and I did too. We were in consensus that he was a top 20 pick. I remember that 2021 draft class. I mean, you had Rashawn Slater, Christian Darrisaw, Tevin Jenkins, as well as Evan Neal. Like, those were in some way, shape, or form your top four, right? And so to see Tevin turn his career around the way he has been phenomenal. He's going to be the only legitimate starter. Now, free agency, again, I'm a bit wary of because I'm not a big believer in spending a lot of money. I also think that this year's free agent class, it's, you know, for these offensive linemen, right? You have guys like Eggleton Jenkins who I still think Eggleton Jenkins is going to be very difficult to pry away from the Green Bay Packers. I mean, there's two things the Bears have running in their favor, which is money as well as the familiarity with Luke Getsy. So I think based on looking at past trends, knowing what the general manager Ryan Poles likes to do, as well as what the assistant general manager Ian Cunningham likes to do, these guys love to build their trenches up through the NFL draft. You look at Poles, he was in Kansas City for all those years, and they drafted probably 8 or 9 offensive linemen just across the board and spread out, right? And by the way, one of them was a high pick in Eric Fisher back in 2013. And then you go ahead and you look at Ian Cunningham's time with the Eagles as well as the Ravens, and they were also two teams that just took multiple offensive linemen just to be able to have that depth. I don't think we give the Eagles front office enough credit for the way that they've handled offensive line injuries over the last couple of years. Like going back to 2021, they had like 12 different offensive line combinations, but three had, right? And they drafted guys and then they had add solid depth as well, right? So Eagles and Ravens have been really good at that. And then number three, I think it's also important to acknowledge that Matt Eberflus is of a similar mindset. And for him, too, it's just more so like, let's build the trenches up through the draft. You know, you look at Eberflus's time with the Colts, their highest pick was Quentin Nelson. Now, I know Matt was involved on the defensive side of the ball, but hey, still, he was part of an organization on a team-building philosophy that was all about build your trenches through the draft, right? So for me, you know, it all comes down to the fact that you dip your toes into free agency, but build through the draft for this, because that's the way you're going to get a consistent starting five. Because what you don't want to do is dish out big money to an offensive lineman, because those contracts are going up too on the open market, and then have it just completely blow up in your face.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, I mean, ideally you want to build this thing up through the draft, but I mean, you look at the Bears, like, with how little they spent this offseason to build this team and how much money they have available to them next year, like, they're going to have to spend, like, because there is a spending floor in the NFL to where you have to spend a certain number. I don't know what the exact number is, but there's a certain amount of money you have to spend through, I think it's like a 3-year period. And the Bears, you know, with how little they spent this year, they're going to have to spend a ton of money this year just to get that to that floor, basically. And not to mention, you know, all the talents and all the holes on this roster right now. So I think they are going to spend in free agency. It's just a matter of who they spend on. Now, like you said before, like, when we're looking at guys that are for sure building blocks, I agree with you. Like, Tevin Jenkins is the only for sure one for me as well. But I wouldn't rule out that this regime really likes Braxton Jones, a long-term piece, because Jones, you know, he's had his ups and downs, but you have to remember that he's a fifth-round pick and he's a rookie. So offensive linemen, typically it takes these guys a couple years to really hit their stride as NFL players. You know, it's not uncommon for the first 2, even 3 years of an offensive lineman's career to be really shaky out the gate. And then we see that year 3, year 4 breakout happen. And they really start to come into their own as players. And you know, there's a ton of examples like that. When you look at this free agency class, for instance, like Caleb McGarry, if you asked me last year whether I would have been interested in signing him in free agency, the right tackle for the Atlanta Falcons, I would have said no way, because his first 3 years were rough in Atlanta as a first round pick. But you look at what he's done this year with the Falcons. He's had a really, really, really good year for them in Atlanta. And I mean, I was watching him play a little bit against the Bears this past week when I could pay attention to just him for the Falcons. And yeah, he looks pretty good as a starting right tackle. So we have to remember that it does take these young offensive linemen a few years to really, you know, get their legs under them in the NFL, and that, you know, year 3, year 4 breakouts do happen. And it's not like Braxton Jones has been like terrible anyway either. He's been pretty solid for a rookie offensive tackle. I know PFF has him graded pretty well. I know a lot of that has to do with his run blocking. His pass protection is, you know, a work in progress, but he has shown some development there. So I wouldn't be surprised if this coaching staff and this regime feels like, you know, they're going to give Braxton Jones maybe another year as a starter to see if he can take that year two jump, basically, and then kind of evaluate whether they need to upgrade from that spot going forward. You look at the rest of this offensive line, like left guard Cody Whitehair is still under contract for a couple more years after this season. And, you know, while you could move on from Cody Whitehair if you June 1st designate him this offseason and spread out his dead money a little bit, which would still be a pretty significant amount of dead money still on his contract. You know, I look at the free agency list and there aren't a ton of left guards available that, you know, excite me that much. So I'm not sure how this regime will feel about, you know, maybe they just stick with Cody White here until maybe they find a replacement in the draft for him. That could be an option as well. But I look at this thing, like, I think you know, this regime will probably feel confident with Tevin Jenkins at right guard. They might give Braxton Jones another chance at left tackle to kind of see what he can do in his second year. And they might stick with Cody White here one more year just to see, because he is still, he's not anything special anymore, but he is still, decent at that left guard spot. But I think center and right tackle are the two spots where you have to upgrade those positions. And I think you have to do that in free agency, because you can add talent still in the draft while still upgrading those spots in free agency as well. And I look at I think Elgton Jenkins makes a ton of sense for this Bears regime if they want to go that direction. Like, if Elgton Jenkins somehow gets away from the Packers, which I think is likely, because the Packers, like, you look at their situation, they are in a rough cap situation. You know, Rodgers' extension really hasn't kicked in yet. Is that's something that a lot of people haven't, realized, is that Rodgers signed a huge extension this past offseason. You know, next year is going to be the first year of that. And from now on, like, his dead money is just going to be insane for the Packers moving forward. They have a lot of other decisions to make. You know, they have to pay Rashawn Gary at some point, and Rashawn Gary is one of the best edge rushers in football. They have to figure out whether they have the money to sign him. And, they have some other pieces across the board. They have some holes that they have to fill across their roster. They still don't have a wide receiver. They still have a wide receiver problem. They have a tight end problem. They have other needs across the offensive line that need to be filled. Defense, a lot of their players, like Adrian Amos, he's coming up for them as a free agent. So they're going to have to fill a couple safety spots probably, because Darnell Savage has been pretty bad for them as safety as well. Like, there are a lot of needs for this Packers team. So I'm not sure, given where they're at from a cap standpoint, whether they're going to be even have the room to keep an Elgton Jenkins long term. So he may just hit the market for them. And I think that if Elgton Jenkins hits the market, he's one of those rare players where he can play all five positions on the offensive line at a pretty effective level. I could see a situation where Ryan Poles, Luke Getsy, they come together and say, hey, Braxton Jones, we're going to give him another year at left tackle. Cody Whitehair, he's solid at left guard. We know what we have in Tevin Jenkins at right guard. Jenkins, we can put him in at right tackle for now, and he can be, a stud right tackle for us in the meantime, until maybe we find someone that's like a long-term piece for us there. Worst case scenario, though, what Elgton Jenkins is as a guard. He's a pretty dang good guard. So I think Elgton Jenkins, he's going to be probably this regime's top choice in free agency if he does hit the market. And then at center, like, there are some options at center that they could look to. They could, sign a center here in free agency. The one guy that's on the top of my list right now is Ethan Pochich, who kind of an unknown going into this year. He was a draft pick of the Seattle Seahawks, but things didn't really work out for him there. But, he went to the Cleveland Browns this year as a vet minimum signing, and he's been phenomenal this year. I think he's out with an injury right now. He just came down with like some kind of a knee injury, but before he got injured, he's been one of the best centers in football this year. So, and centers usually aren't that expensive on the open market. And especially Ethan Poch is in his position where he's kind of a one-year wonder at this point. He could be a guy you bring in there. And I think even if he regresses a little bit, he's still going to be an upgrade over a guy like Sam Mustipher, who hasn't been all that great this year for the Bears. So I think those are two easy signings that you can make right there. And then when you get to the draft, I think, offensive line has to be a priority in the draft once again. Like, I think they still need to add depth at tackle, because, even if you bring in a guy like Elgton Jenkins in free agency, and you keep a guy like Braxton Jones as your starter, you have Larry Borum and Alex Leatherwood as other young tackles on this roster, but you can still add more depth there, more versatile pieces for this offensive line. And I think they need to get younger in the interior, because they need to find a replacement for Cody Whitehair long term. There's nothing wrong with getting another center on this roster too to develop behind, if they go out and sign a guy in free agency. So I think, the draft is going to have to be a top priority. And, speaking of the draft, when you look at the outcome of this latest loss to the Falcons here, the Bears now, they officially have not officially, but if we're projecting this thing out, if the season ended today, the Bears have a top three pick going into the 2023 NFL draft. So that's big for a lot of reasons here. The Bears, if they wanted to spend it on the top offensive lineman in the draft, they could certainly do that, but there are going to be a lot of options, I think, now that the Bears are in that top three discussion area. So I think that's kind of a nice way to segue into our next segment here for this podcast. You said, now that the Bears could have potentially a top three pick here in this next draft, What do you think the strategy should be for them? What are some of the options that you think are available to the Bears now that they have, that they are in that position this high in the draft?
Well, I think really the Bears have this major advantage, right? You are a team that's already got your young quarterback in place. The good news is you've got some youth on both sides of the football that you hope is going to take another step forward next offseason. But the reality for the Bears is this, is they there's only two options. You're either standing pat where you are at third overall and taking a stud such as a Jalen Carter or a Will Anderson or even a Miles Murphy or a Brian Breesy for the defensive side of the ball. For the offensive side of the ball, I would say do target one of these offensive linemen like a Peter Skoronski, Western. And there's people that don't have Skoronski as a top five pick, but hey, we've got a long way to go. The combine's going to come around. You're going to have pro days. Guys are going to fly up and down the board. It's going to be so fluid. So that's one way. And then I think the second way is this, right? Is that you trade down and you go ahead and make a deal with a quarterback needy team. What's the advantage of this? Well, there's three signal callers in this class that are guaranteed to be first round picks. That's CJ Stroud from Ohio State, Bryce Young from Alabama, as well as Will Levis from Kentucky, right? Back in August or September, you could argue that there were four or five, but it's really materializing now to, I think, be three guaranteed quarterbacks in the first round. So you need to trade back with a team like the Carolina Panthers, for example, who are a quarterback needy team. They don't have the quarterback of the future in place. They can afford to kind of move up somewhat and mortgage their future. And so I think in the process, what you do is you either get multiple first round picks, or depending on how far you move back, you are getting multiple first round picks, as well as some second round picks in 2023, as well as additional picks in 2024 to kind of help you round out your draft classes over the next 2 years. Now, the Bears are still in a predicament because if a player like a Will Anderson or a Jalen Carter is there, by all means, the extra draft capital is nice in one sense, but Anderson are going to be day one impact players, right? So you go ahead and you kind of just play it by ear. And I would say this, right? For this team, your first round pick has to be a lineman, just based off what we're seeing on both sides of the ball, because the offensive and defensive line are just getting dominated so easily that it's at a point where it's just like you really don't have an offensive or defensive line for the most part. You're just trotting the five best guys out there that you know are better than anything else that you have on the roster. So for me, right, trading down is so appealing, but if if Carter or Anderson are there, then you by all means pull the trigger and do not hesitate, because there's going to be other opportunities to trade back.
Yeah, I think that's well said. You know, I tend to agree with you. Like, it would be nice to get a king's ransom for, you know, a team willing to come up to get a quarterback here. I think that's probably the ideal situation in many years. But, I mean, like you said, it would be really tough to pass up on a Jalen Carter or a Will Anderson if they're available for the taking for you, if you're, you know, the Bears here. Now, if the Bears are maybe at that number two spot, you know, let's say they somehow lose enough to where – you know, because the teams ahead of them right now are the Texans at number one, and I don't think the Texans are winning another game this year. So Texans are going to be number one, I think. The Carolina Panthers, though, could play themselves out of that number two spot just ahead of the Bears. So if the Bears somehow lose the rest of their games and they're in that number two spot in this upcoming draft, I think it'd be really appealing for them. And they'd be crazy not to consider trading down in that spot because, you know, Bryce Young's going to go number one. And the next quarterback on the board is going to be C.J. Stroud. And there are going to be a lot of teams, I think, willing to move up for C.J. Stroud because, you know, he does have, you know, some pretty good traits as a quarterback prospect. And I think he's clearly the number two guy in this class. So, you know, if Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud are off the board by the time that the Bears are on the clock at number three, that kind of limits, I think, their trade down options there because, you know, while I think there are a lot of fans in the NFL for Will Levis and, you know, Anthony Richardson out of Florida, who's kind of come on as the season has gone along, there are going to be some guys that teams that want to move up for those guys, I think, in this draft. I don't think it's going to be the same level of appetite for those guys as you would for a Bryce Young or CJ Stroud. So if they're at that number two spot, then I think you have to find a way to kind of trade down there and get a King's Ransom, because you could really set yourself up with a ton of picks there and still be in a position where you're in that kind of top five range to get maybe one of these top two defensive players. Yeah, if they're number two, then I think they have to trade down almost, because there are going to be teams calling to move up and get, you know, one of these quarterbacks. At number three or number four, though, I'm assuming that Bryce Young and CJ Stroud are off the board at that point. I think at that point, you're probably not going to get a ton of offers for trading down in that spot. I think the best thing for the Bears then in that situation would be at number three overall, I think Jalen Carter is probably the pick. And you're feeling really good about it. And, you know, it's kind of a toss-up right now, right? Because Willie Anderson, Jalen Carter, you know, they're very similar prospects, I think, in this draft class, where both are clearly the best at their position. And I think we feel, you know, both of us feel pretty good that they're going to be all-pro talents for a long time in the NFL. But I think with, you know, we saw it this last offseason, you know, clearly this regime places an importance on that three-tech position. And Jalen Carter has all the makings of a dominant three tech at the next level. And Will Anderson, for as great of a prospect as he is, you know, I'm not sure he's the best fit for what his coaching staff wants at defensive end. You know, Eberflus's defense, you look at it in the past, he loves having kind of these hybrid defensive ends that can defend the run, kind of these bigger body guys that can defend the run on the edge and then kick inside the pass rush from the interior as well. And I'm not sure if Will Anderson, he's kind of a smaller guy for an edge rusher. I'm not sure if he's the best fit for that style of defensive end. There are some better fits for that in this draft. I look at Miles Murphy out of Clemson would probably be a better fit for that style of defensive end. But Jalen Carter, you don't have to worry about his fit. Like, he's a perfect fit for what they're looking for at that three-tech position, because he is quick. He can penetrate up the field. You know, he's an explosive pass rusher. He can get into the backfield and just disrupt everything. He does a lot of things that this coaching staff looks for at that defensive tackle spot. So I think at number three, those two quarterbacks are off the board. I think Jalen Carter's the pick, and you're feeling really good about it, because I think he's going to be a future pro, you know, perennial Pro Bowl talent at that defensive tackle position. And I mean, yeah, this Bears team, they have to start building up this offensive roster around Justin Fields. I understand that. But you know, to me, the value just isn't there for a wide receiver, isn't quite there for an offensive lineman. And there are other avenues, like we've talked about, to address those spots in free agency and later on in the draft. So, you know, at the same time, like, you can't pass up on premium talent like that. I think there's a clear gap between Anderson, Carter, and some of these other prospects at other positions. And that's just the way I see it at this point. So, I think we're both in agreement here, though. You know, whether it's Anderson or Carter, you know, if the Bears aren't trading down, those two have to be the pick. And, you know, that's a good spot to be in, because if your options are between getting a King's Ransom to move down and get a ton of draft picks to build your, you know, to restock this roster, or getting a premium defensive talent, like, you know, there's no wrong answer there, I think. You know, both of those options are pretty good ones, I think.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So let's move on to kind of our final topic for today's episode. And that's, you know, looking ahead to next week's game The Bears are going to be on the road to play the New York Jets. And the biggest storyline for this one is, assuming that Justin Fields is healthy enough to play, we have a matchup between two quarterbacks from the 2021 draft class, and obviously Justin Fields and Zach Wilson, who is a starter for the New York Jets. And there's been a lot of talk this past week because, you know, and we're going to get into it here. Zach Wilson just absolutely struggling in his second year here for the New York Jets. And, you know, there was this whole firestorm on social media this past week where, you know, the Jets, they just played the Patriots. They had a miserable day on offense. Zach Wilson was awful in that game. They only scored 3 points. The Jets had more punts than Zach Wilson had completions in that game. So that just tells you how inept they were from a passing game standpoint. And Zach Wilson, after the game, was asked, you know, do you feel like you let the defense down? Because defense for the Jets is incredible. And he was asked, like, do you feel like you let the defense down only scoring 3 points in this game? And Zach Wilson said, just flat out, nope, don't feel like we let them down. And that just, as tone deaf as it is, like, one, like, yeah, you are letting them down by only scoring 3 points in a close game like that. But, yeah, it's not looking great for Zach Wilson in New York right now. So I think this allows us to go back to our pre-draft evaluations of these quarterbacks going into it. You say it, I'll start with you. Like, what was your, going back to that 2021 draft, kind of putting your mindset back there, you know, what was your evaluation on Wilson? How did you have him compared to some of these other quarterbacks in last year's class? And, you know, what are you seeing right now from him that you think is a problem for him in New York right now?
Yeah, well, going back to that draft, my rankings have not changed a bit, or they haven't changed slightly, I should say. I had Trevor Lawrence at 1, Justin Fields at 2, I had Zach Wilson at 3, Trey Lance at 4, and Mac Jones at number 5. I think ultimately when you look at it, right, the only major shift in the rankings has been Fields at 1, Lawrence at 2. When I look at Zach Wilson, well, guess what? He has dropped down to quarterback 4 for me, simply because the jury's still out on Trey Lance. We've kind of seen what Mac Jones can do when Mac Jones is playing at a high level. But Zach's near the bottom, or at the very bottom, simply because when you look at him, right, you're looking at a quarterback that's basically a one-year wonder whose processing is way off. He just can't read defenses, which then feeds into the inability of him to be able to make right decisions as well as make the right reads and keep the Jets moving down the field. I look at the core that's around Zach. You have some really good running backs. You have some really good wide receivers in Elijah Moore, pretty solid tight end group too. It's very clear that a lot of this is on Zach. Now, part of it is simply because he's in a situation where, you know, Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh, they don't necessarily take no for an answer. They basically said, hey, Zach, it's up to you to be able to go out and to get this thing done. But the reality is that Zach coming out of BYU, I remember being comparisons that were being made to guys like a Patrick Mahomes. I think it's very clear to me that those comparisons were never ever warranted, because he's not the freakish athlete that Patrick Mahomes is, right? He doesn't have the intangibles and the traits that Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers do, right? It was kind of just this like feel good, look good type story that was hyped up by the national media. And I think we're seeing now, like, I understand that the injury Zach had last year as well as to start this year hurt his development. But even then, he's been back for a while now, and you're still seeing the same issues pop up. Decision-making, pocket presence, accuracy, you know, inability to process. What you're really seeing, I think, is an extremely limited quarterback who doesn't even have mobility to be able to bail him out when the pocket begins to break down.
Yeah, I mean, Zach Wilson, he's legitimately been the worst starter in the NFL this year. And I mean, there's a variety of reasons for why that's the case. You talk about the injuries potentially hurting his development, but you know, it sucks for Jets fans because this Jets team around him is legitimately like really freaking good. Like if they had just average quarterback play, they would be in it for the AFC discussion. Like they wouldn't be on the Bills or the Chiefs level, but they'd be that next team, you know, in that Dolphins class of teams where, yeah, you don't feel like they're going to beat the Chiefs or the Bills in the playoffs, but they're going to give them a run for their money, certainly. And, you know, that defense is phenomenal. It's amazing the work that Robert Saleh has done to rebuild that defense and Joe Douglas has done. They're loaded at all three levels of that unit. They're one of the best units in football. So they have that to support a young quarterback. And here's the kicker, like Zach Wilson, for all of his struggles, like his situation is really good for a young quarterback. I feel like they've had some injuries in the offensive line, but they've been able to, you know, sustain some level of competent, solid play on the offensive line for the most part. You look at all the weapons they have on offense, you know, whether it's Garrett Wilson, Corey Davis, Elijah Moore in the slot, who, you know, wants out because he knows that Zach Wilson can't play. They brought in a couple of tight ends this offseason, you know, Breece Hall before the injury, you know, he was looking like one of the best running backs in football. You know, they have Matt LaFleur's brother, Mike LaFleur, as the offensive coordinator. You know, I think he's a pretty smart offensive mind coming from that Shanahan tree. So there is a lot going for Zach Wilson where he should be showing some progress here by this point in time. He should be getting better. And the fact that he's not, instead is getting worse as the year has gone along, that is worrisome because, you know, Zach Wilson, if you look at his first couple starts, he did look like he was making some strides his first couple of starts, but the wheels have really come off the rails here over the past like month or so. I think defense have kind of figured out that, you know, there isn't really a consistent process with Zach Wilson. This is something where I look back at my pre-draft evaluations and, you know, I think there was an element of fool's gold because you look at Zach Wilson as a prospect, he only had that one really productive year at BYU. And, you know, it came against a very soft schedule that he played against. You know, the one good team he played against that year, Coastal Carolina, he did not have his best game in that one. And that should have been a sign, that should have been a red flag right away that, you know, the one, you know, quality opponent that he did play against, he did not play well in that game. So there was a little bit of, you know, bum slang in that season where he was taking advantage of, you know, playing a lower level of competition, doing well there. But also you look at his game, you know, he was never the greatest quarterback in the pocket, in structure at BYU. You know, what was the main selling point of Zach Wilson in college? It was all the out of structure stuff, you know, rolling out of the pocket, you know, throwing the ball off platform, making these ridiculous throws down the field that look nice in a highlight reel. But from a consistency standpoint, we're not seeing, you know, he wasn't necessarily the greatest processor at BYU. He wasn't someone that went through his progressions very well at BYU. And that's something that you kind of overlooked, at least I did, because I felt like, you know, from my evaluation standpoint, because I had him as the second quarterback in that class behind Trevor Lawrence. Justin Fields was my third quarterback. You know, I felt confident about Zach Wilson's, you know, what I perceived as a feel for the game, that I felt like he could develop all the easy stuff in terms of playing in structure, processing, pocket presence. I felt like he could get better at that as he got more experience. Clearly, that's not the case. He looks lost out there for the Jets. He's missing easy throws. The accuracy, like you mentioned, just is not nothing. There are so many, you know, there are dudes running open, wide open in that Jets offense, and he's just airmailing them by 5 yards over their heads. It's just, it's not pretty to look at. And then, you know, bailing out of clean pockets, not handling pressure very well. That kind of goes back to level competition because, you know, Zach Wilson in college didn't have to deal with a ton of pressure on him. You know, he had good offensive lines at BYU. He went against weak opponents that didn't have great pass rushes. So he got to sit back there all day and not have to deal with, you know, a ton of, you know, dirty pockets. And I know Justin Fields didn't necessarily have to do that either at Ohio State, but there were games that Justin Fields played in college where, you know, he did have a legitimate pass rush he was going up against where he did have to maneuver against some dirty pockets there and play well and take some hits and, you know, not bail out of clean pockets very often. And Zach Wilson never had that his last year in college. So I think this is a learning experience for me in terms of, you know, going back and, you know, how do I evaluate these quarterbacks moving forward? You know, it's not just about the highlight plays. It's about the consistent process that these guys have. And I think we're starting to see that, you know, that consistent process is so much more important than what a guy can do. You know, what a guy can do is great, but if you're not able to maximize your ability consistently on a play-to-play basis, it really doesn't mean anything. So yeah, it's alarming for Zach Wilson in New York right now. And you know, if he doesn't have a good game against this Bears defense, which might be the worst in football right now, then yeah, I think it's panic time for the Jets, because he's very close to that bust category right now. It's not looking good for him. But that leads us into our preview for this upcoming game against the Jets. And let's just get right into it here. You say, what's your main storyline for this one?
Yeah, I think really the main storyline is this, is how is this Bears offense going to go ahead and perform against one of the best defenses in the NFL, right? You look at it, and the Jets do have one of the top groups on defense. They've got multiple first-round picks, such as Jermaine Johnson being one of them. So really now it becomes a question of not even Justin Fields' health, but we've seen what this defense, I'm sorry, what this offense can do against okay or mediocre defenses, right? They've been able to figure out a way to move the ball, but now can you do it against one of the best groups in the NFL? And it's not just Justin, right? It's can the wide receivers, offensive line, can the tight end, can the running game be consistent enough so that on plays where there are passes called and meant to be passes, Justin can actually get the ball out instead of having to consistently run away and take a broken play from a 5-yard loss to a 20 or 30 yard gain. Nothing wrong with that, but at some point, I think as an offense, right, you have to be able to allow your quarterback to sit back there, let the routes develop, let the passing game develop, and just let the QB do his thing and get into a rhythm, because the Bears haven't found that ideal rhythm this year.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, I'd say for me, the main storyline is like, what's the health status of Justin Fields? I think that's going to be the main thing going into this, because we don't know at this point, because Justin Fields, it sounds like it's a separated shoulder, which is not as severe as a dislocated shoulder. I'm not a doctor or medical person whatsoever, so I don't know the difference between the two, but that's besides the point. But you know, first it comes out that Justin Fields is day-to-day, but then Eberflus makes this weird comment where, yeah, Justin Fields is day-to-day, but his injury could be season-ending still. That doesn't register whatsoever for me. Like, if he's day-to-day, how is this injury, you know, potentially season-ending? Because if it's a day-to-day injury, I would assume that it's something that can be managed, like, day-to-day. Like, you know, one day it's going to be, you know, good to go. Another day it's, you know, not going to be good to go. Like, that's what the assumption of day to day is. If it's a season ending injury, I would assume that it's something that can't be managed on a day to day basis. So for him to say that was just weird to me. I think it's going to be telling, you know, what happens during practices this week, whether Justin Fields, you know, is participating or not. If we're getting DMPs all throughout the week, then yeah, I'm sure that he's probably not going to be playing in this one, but you know, who knows? Like, it could be a situation where he doesn't play in practice and they just try to get him, you know, in some level of comfort for the game to get him to play. I almost think at this point that, like, you know, this Jets defense, they're so freaking good, man. Like, in that front four, they have one of the nastiest front fours in all of football. I almost think that you'd be better off just, you know, making Trevor Siemian the sacrificial lamb for this one and get Justin Fields healthy. If not for the Packers game, then through the bye week and get him healthy for the Eagles game after the bye week, because, you know, it's a situation where you have to start thinking about the long term here. Like, Justin Fields has nothing left to prove this year. He's clearly your franchise quarterback that you're building around moving forward. Like, why are we putting this guy at risk for further injury in a season where we're not going anywhere? And honestly, it'd be better off to put Trevor Siemian out there if he's not healthy, because you're probably going to lose the game if that happens. So, you know, that's where I'm at with it. But I think it's going to be the main storyline is, you know, Justin Fields, what's his health and, you know, how's that going to affect things? Because if Justin Fields isn't out there, then this Bears team has no chance of winning, because even if Zach Wilson is absolute garbage and, you know, there's a possibility that Zach Wilson is atrocious once again, like, I have a hard time seeing this offense for the Bears doing anything. It's this Jets defense that doesn't involve Justin Fields just being a superhero out there, which, you know, it could be compromised because of the injuries. So let's get in. Let's, you know, wrap this up by predicting this game, you said, and giving me your X factor. So let's start with you. What's your prediction for this one, and who's your X factor for this game?
My prediction for this one is simple and straightforward. The Bears' losing streak extends to 5 games. They lose to the Jets 20-14 as a result of a late turnover forced by New York's defense. Once again, I think the X factor is going to be offensive coordinator Luke Getsy. The question is this: is can Luke, inside of 3 and 4 minutes at the end of every quarter, can he start calling plays that are going to keep the ball moving, but also ensure that the Bears offense doesn't look so predictable? If not, then I think the talk about Luke being a head coach next year is going to be put to bed.
Yeah, I have the Jets winning this one as well. 20-10 is going to be my score, but if Justin Fields can't play, I probably might say 20-3, because, you know, I'm not very confident in a Trevor Siemian run offense here against a really, really dangerous, you know, defense that the Jets have. Like, you just look at this offense right now, you know, Justin Fields is banged up. Your best running back, Khalil Herbert, is, you know, out for a significant amount of time. So you don't have that explosive development in the backfield if those two cannot play. They're still trying to figure out things at wide receiver. You know, they still have a lot of moving pieces at offensive line. It just doesn't give me a lot of confidence against the Jets defense, where Quinnen Williams, he's been one of the best players. He's been one of the best defensive players in football this year. That entire front is just filled with guys that just get after you. Sauce Gardner, he might be the best. He's one of the top 5 corners in football right away as a rookie. And, you know, Reed on the other side of him, you know, he's no scrub either on the other side. So they have a lot of talent in the secondary. Like, and Salah is just doing a great job with these guys right now, scheming everything up. That, you know, teams are not able to score on this Jets defense. They're able to get after quarterbacks nonstop. So I just don't think this offense is going to, you know, unless Luke Getsy can scheme around it, I'm not very optimistic about them. And, you know, for as bad as Zach Wilson has played this year for the Jets, like, you know, this Bears defense, I have no confidence in them being able to stop anybody at this point. And I think the Jets, you know, Zach Wilson's probably going to not play well for them, but he's probably going to do just enough, or this Jets offense, I should say, it's going to do just enough to pull out a win here. Maybe the Jets, you know, have a defensive touchdown or something to score some points, but I think it's going to be an ugly game of football to watch, especially if Justin Fields doesn't play. I am, you know, excited. If Justin Fields does play, I wonder, you know, if he's going to be extra motivated in this one, though, to kind of prove the Jets wrong, you know, kind of similar to Patrick Mahomes, what he did against the Bears when in 2019, because Mitch Trubisky got drafted over him. It'd be really fun to see Justin Fields, you know, sweep, you know, all the rest of the young 2021 quarterbacks this year that he's played against. So that would be fun if that happens. I, you know, if he can't go, though, obviously that's not in play. As for my X factor, I'm going to go with, I think the offensive line is going to be the X factor in this one, because it really comes down to, can this offensive line open up run lanes? Can they pass protect, more importantly, though? If they can't pass protect, like, this game's over, because the Jets have a dangerous pass rush. We've talked about that ad nauseum here. So if it's a situation where whoever's playing at quarterback, whether it's Siemian or Fields, if they're under duress the entire game, this Bears offense is not going to be able to move the ball. So I think the offensive line needs to have their best game of the year. If they don't, it's going to be a rough one for them. So with that said, that's going to do it for us here at the Picks for Polls podcast. Make sure to like, rate, subscribe, review the podcast at Blue Wire. Make sure to also check out the Bear Report podcast with Zach and Aaron as well, previewing a lot of things for these upcoming Bears games. You know, as for us here, make sure to give us a follow on social media on Twitter at Picks for Polls. You say, where can our listeners follow you and find your work?
Yeah, guys, you can follow me on Twitter as well as Instagram at Usaid Koshal. You can check out my work on the Bear Report. I have a NFC North recap dropping each week. I've got a couple mock drafts coming out at the end of each month because November is quickly approaching. And then just some general storylines and articles, pre and post game articles about the Bears.
Yeah, absolutely. Make sure to give those a read for you. Say it. As for me, you can follow me on Twitter at AJFreeman25. You can find my work at the Bear Report as well. Going to be coming out with my next Tracking the Trenches shortly here, recapping this latest game against the Falcons. And again, keep an eye out for the Bear Report YouTube channel. Trying to get something out on Justin Fields on the Bear Report YouTube channel for you guys to check out as well if you want to give that a watch. But other than that, everyone, you know, Thanksgiving, by the time this episode out, Thanksgiving is going to be here. And I just want to wish everyone, whether it's our listeners and everyone, to your families and friends back home, have a happy Thanksgiving, happy holidays, you know, a good start to this holiday season. And, you know, we're looking forward to speaking to you guys next week following this next Bears game. And until next time, Bears fans, bear down.